Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who are trailblazers and have helped shape our world, transforming who we are and how we live.
Hello, everyone. It is time for Powerful Women Let's Talk. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Jennifer Moss. It is a pleasure to bring you today's powerful woman. As Chief Executive Officer of Feeding America, Claire Babineau-Fontenot oversees the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization and second largest U.S. charity. A Louisiana native, Claire has been entrusted with the leadership of teams for nearly three decades. And prior to joining Feeding America, Claire spent 13 years as part of Walmart's leadership team, with her most recent role being Executive Vice President and Global Treasurer. Before Walmart, she was partner in charge of the Baton Rouge office and tax practice, leader for Adams and Reese LLP. That's one of U.S. News and World Report's best law firms. Now, of course, all of that has powerful woman written all over it. Plus, Claire has a deep personal commitment to strengthening communities. She's long been an avid volunteer and board member. She has volunteered in the fight against hunger and other causes since her youth, and later she served on a number of nonprofit boards, including the court-appointed Special Advocates for Children, the Board of Directors and Audit Committee for the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, among many others. And so we're so glad to welcome you, Claire Babineau-Fontenot, to Powerful Women Let's Talk. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we're glad to welcome you. We wanted to talk to you initially during Black History Month as we look at all your achievements, but the work that you do stands out any time of the year. So again, we thank you for joining us. You've had quite an accomplished career. So first, tell us about the work that you do with Feeding America. We all know that hunger remains a huge issue in America. In fact, during the pandemic, your office reports that about 60 million people turned to Feeding America in 2020, putting a spotlight, of course, on the need there. Hunger still critical in America? I'm surely guessing it is. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So as CEO of Feeding America, it's my privilege to serve as part of a vast network. I often say that we are wherever hunger is. And unfortunately, every county, every parish, that's that Babineau-Fontenot coming out in me, across this nation and Puerto Rico, no matter how rich or how poor, every single one has people struggling with the weight of food insecurity inside of it. So we serve this whole country. And one of the things that we're really proud to be a part of is ensuring that people get access to the food that they need. And so many people can't do it alone. So we're there in partnership with communities. During the pandemic, since the beginning of the pandemic, our estimates are that we provided 10.7 billion meals. 10.7 billion meals. So I get to be a part of that, along with over 200 food banks, over 60,000 agency partners, millions of volunteers across the country. It has been a huge privilege to get to serve. Especially right now, it feels even more powerful for me to play on the word powerful, that I get to be a part of this network right now.
Absolutely. You know, I've done a number of stories over the years on those who may have ended up needing help from a food bank. Is there still perhaps sort of a misperception of sorts of just who might need help from a food bank, you know, who they actually serve, especially in lieu of and during the pandemic? A lot of people misplaced and, you know, needing services they didn't require before.
Yeah. One of the big issues I think we've had in this country has been around misperceptions around hunger. As I mentioned before, even the richest counties in this country have people who are food insecure inside of them and have for a very long time. So people fail to identify that, oh, you have to look to distant shores to find people struggling with hunger or food insecurity. It's simply not true. And it's been true here for a very long time. Tens of millions of people, around 10% of our population, has struggled with food insecurity consistently for many decades. It peaked during the 2008 economic downturn to almost 15% of our population. So a lot of hunger all around. Hunger looks like you. Hunger looks like me. Hunger could be you. Hunger could be me. I think that's one of the things we learned in the pandemic, by the way, is what if all of a sudden, out of the blue, you didn't have a job and you're in a two-income family and your partner didn't have a job either? Would you need to get in that line? How long would it take for you to get in that line? So hunger is us, and we together, though, can do something about it. So I'm glad I get to be a part of an organization that's focused on making sure that that line gets shorter and shorter every day and every year.
Absolutely. You've had a lot of work to do. You led a transformational team and a change, building a diverse group of female leaders. What did you do, and what does that look like?
Yeah. So every place I've ever worked, so you gave that intro, and I was thinking about all the places that I worked before. They were less diverse when I joined than they were once I was here. And I think that's part of my responsibility. And of course, they were more successful after they were more diverse. So I'm very focused on ensuring that our goals are achieved. I know that goals are more likely to be achieved if you bring diverse voices to the table, people with unique experiences. They get to weigh in on these thorny issues together. You'll be more successful. And it's proved true every place that I've been. And it certainly has proved true here at Feeding America. We have extraordinary leadership here. And extraordinarily diverse leadership. And many of the leaders on this team are powerful women who are using their power in service to communities. So it's quite, it's a lot of fun to watch, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's gratifying to watch. We prove out every day the power of diversity.
And that is, of course, huge. And so through Feeding America and perhaps beyond, do you believe that you can maybe put an end or at least a huge dent in the hunger crisis in America?
Oh, absolutely. I know that we can because some of it just doesn't make sense. I'll give you, you talked earlier about in the intro about my background, and I say I used to do numbers for a living, right? So I was a treasurer at Fortune One. So let me give you a math problem. So about 72 billion pounds of perfectly edible food go to landfills every year, not counting household waste, which some estimate at 40%, but don't even count that. 72 billion pounds of perfectly edible food go to landfills, while tens of millions of people are food insecure. The math just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Food insecurity in this country doesn't make sense. So of course we could do something about it. We have to first know it's real. I think the pandemic helped us to know it's real. And we have to decide it's unacceptable. And then together, this country can do anything it decides. We went to the moon. Remember that?
Absolutely.
We went to the moon. If we can go to the moon, we can solve hunger.
Absolutely. Because it doesn't have to be. I mean, the bottom line is it doesn't have to exist, really.
That is exactly right. It does not. We choose for it to exist. We could choose for it not to.
So let's talk about Claire. You have held many positions in a number of companies, and we often ask our powerful women interviewees, have there been any barriers? And this is more on the personal side of Claire when I say that you've encountered along the way, you know, any obstacles perhaps that you have faced on your career's journey?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that when I meet other women who have achieved some success, in the conventional senses of it, if you've matriculated up in organizations, there's some things that we must have in common, right? If you're woman of color, then there's some other stuff we must have in common. So absolutely, there've been barriers. I chose, I've always had a head for numbers. I say I have a head for numbers and a heart for people. So I chose areas that were so unconventional for people like me. And there were obstacles to people taking me seriously in those spaces. In the law, I chose tax. And tax, really, tax? And I found people struggled with the idea that I would be competent in such a highly technical space. And I believe that the fact that I was Black had something to do with it. When I had opportunities to lead teams, I was young when I had my first opportunities to lead teams. My youth was considered a barrier. Surely she won't be able to have command and she won't be able to lead people. My being a woman, I believe, was a barrier in that as well, or perceived as a barrier by other people. Well, she won't have what it takes to do the hard stuff. When young people deal with hard stuff and do hard stuff, women deal with hard stuff and do hard stuff. Black people deal with hard stuff and do hard stuff.
Absolutely.
I happen to be all of those at the same time for a while. I'm no longer young.
Oh, you can claim it. Yes, you are. Yes,
okay.
You are.
All right. Well, there we go. Young claim at heart. That. Okay. Yes, I will hold on to it then. But those are things that definitely were obstacles. And there are times when they were overt obstacles where mm-hmm. people actually told me things about, like, I've never reported to a woman before, so you're going to have to be patient with me when I don't quite understand your language.
Oh, you're going to have to be patient, right?
I'm going to have to be patient.
The onus is on you, of course. Yeah.
While you don't understand my language,
yeah.
Okay, so I'm speaking a foreign tongue when
exactly.
I speak woman in the workplace. So, of course, I had those things happen. But more often than not, I also had extraordinary people who saw things in me that sometimes I didn't even see in myself mm-hmm. At the exact same time as I was having to deal and confront with some of the ridiculous and avoidable. I also had these opportunities to see myself through the eyes of other people who saw a lot in me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those other people were other women. And there was something extraordinary for me to be in the company of accomplished women who thought, you know what, you can do more, and I'm going to invest in you so that you get a chance to do more. And that happened with men too, and it happened with people of lots of races. And if you think about the fact that in most of the roles that I've had, leadership roles that I've had, I've been the first African American to do that. Mm-hmm. I've sometimes been the first woman to do that as well. As a consequence, whomever it is that was making the decision was not going to be African American and was not going to be a woman. So I've been lots of investments in me throughout my journey, especially my professional journey, by people of all stripes. And I feel grateful for that. And I also feel responsible for trying to be that for other people at the same time.
And, you know, that is the whole point behind, part of that is the point behind Powerful Women, to share those stories, to share the fact that you had obstacles and those types of things. So many women face those things, and other women then are encouraged, you know, just like you were encouraged by some of those that you came across as well. So for our listeners and our viewers, tell us what it has been like to find your own voice as you look at that, to become comfortable in your own skin. You know, to be the CEO of Feeding America, I would imagine you have to be comfortable in your own skin and to have found your voice. So So how did you do that? Encourage others with that.
Mm. Well, I actually, you know, they say it's always darkest before the dawn. Mm-hmm. That certainly is my story on that question. So I found myself throughout the course of my career, I always worked hard, and I got tapped for these opportunities, and they were wonderful opportunities, but I always felt highly competent to do whatever the job was that I was being asked to do. So I got to Walmart, and I was asked to be, my first job there was VP of Audit and Tax Policy. And I felt I had spent 16 years getting ready to do that job. Well, between the time that I said yes and the time I got there, my team doubled. By the time I arrived, within about 4 months, my team had doubled again. Within another 4 months, my team had doubled again.
Wow.
Within a year and a half, I was the chief tax officer, global chief tax officer at Walmart. And the person who had been in the role before me, I tend to just call it like I see it. So forgive me if I'm being too unfiltered in saying this, but the person who was in the role before me was a middle-aged white man from Alabama, and he's a fine guy. But I then spent the next 6 months, my first 6 months as chief tax officer, pretending to be a middle-aged white man from Alabama. Mm. And I don't know if people are taking a look at what I am. I am not a middle-aged white man from Alabama. I went so deep in the imposter syndrome. Oh my goodness. I worked so hard at denying who I was to myself and all around me. And what I found after 6 months of doing that was I was failing miserably in the job. Mm. And I had to go in and talk to this guy who was my boss, who saw something in me. He's one of those people who saw something in me. Mm-hmm. He and my CEO at Walmart, they saw something in me. had given me this opportunity, and I had to go in. I felt the need to go in and tell him I was failing. And that was transformational for me, was to realize that what was certain is if I pretended to be something I was not, I was going to fail. So I had to then stop and say, okay, so I've got to acknowledge I am finite. This is a big job. I'm not an expert at every aspect of the job. And this is when I really leaned into building diverse teams. And I said, no, I need to do an honest assessment of my gaps and of the organization's gaps. And we need to go find people who have skills that I do not have. That was transformational.
And it was part of that finding that voice there. You had to really take a deeper dive into yourself before you could make progress in what you were doing, because you were trying to be somebody else.
That's exactly, you are absolutely correct. You're spot on. That's exactly what had to happen. And over time, once I did that, what was certain to me, because it was so stark, because I was in it, was I was going to fail if I did it the way I was. So I had to make a change or fail. And for me, I just couldn't let myself fail in that space. And I have felt that people are counting on me when I get the chance to be first. And, and you know, I try to alleviate some of that pressure from other people who get the chance to be first. But I certainly felt the responsibility of being first when I was. And when you get the chance to be first, you can't fail at it, right? So anyway, so that compulsion caused me to really do some introspection and to emerge as myself in all my finiteness.
Yeah.
And to build a team of people who were exceptional. And that organization thrived when I got out of my way and when I got out of its way. Mm-hmm. So now I'm at Feeding America. And the first thing that I did was to do an assessment of, so what can I bring to the table? Mm-hmm. What will I not be able to bring to the table? Let me surround myself with people who have skill sets that I do not have. Let me value those skill sets that I do not have. Let me lift them up. One quick example is I am not a food banker. I will never be a food banker. So I don't come into this role pretending to be a food banker, but I surround myself by people who have deep food banking experience. And that's part of the secret of the successes that we're having.
That is huge. That's huge because it's a lot of pressure too to be in that spot. And until you find your voice, like you said, you kind of are on the wrong trail. So as you have moved forward with that, you work with so many people, I know, being Feeding America CEO, what are the leadership traits that you often look for with those that are with you on this journey, perhaps those you work with, those you mentor? What are some of the leadership traits that you look at?
Yeah. So number one is I need to understand the person's why.
Mm-hmm. That's huge.
I gotta know. So I go deep, have lots of questions about what really drives you? What does success really mean for you? What do you hope to achieve? Like in the work that I do at Feeding America, if there's not something inordinately important to you about ensuring that people get enough to eat, then this isn't the team for you. Mm-hmm. No matter how brilliant you are, no matter how skilled you are, this is not going to be the right place because it's going to get hard. And there's got to be a reason that you stick with it when it's hard. And if the reason isn't because you care desperately about being a part of solutions for people experiencing food insecurity, then you probably shouldn't be on this team. So that's one of the things I'd like to understand the person's why. Another thing is I try to work with people who are authentic. Do they know themselves really? And sometimes it's hard to face who you really are. Mm-hmm. Have they gotten to a place where they're willing to look in the mirror, and do they know who they are? Are they authentic? If they're going to be leading other people, they've got to care, and it's got to be palpable that they care. So do you care about other people? Will you invest in other people? And then I look for specific technical skills, but I don't even get to the technical skills before those other things. So the servant leader model is the one that speaks to me most powerfully. I find I work best with people for whom that model speaks to. Though not everybody is exact, it doesn't show up in exactly the same way for everybody, but that's the model that works best for me. And I find when I complement myself with other people who have a similar approach to leadership, that it tends to translate to value. So those would be my answers.
So what has been your inspiration as you traveled along? Again, we're on this journey, all of us are on a journey. Are you where you want to be? And the bigger question, are you enjoying your journey?
Oh, I am enjoying my journey. And I think enjoying is interesting because you know how you watch a movie and it might even be a sad movie at parts, but after the movie's over, there's this fulfillment that you feel, mm-hmm. even if it's not a comedy.
Right.
You
know what I mean? Absolutely. So, absolutely.
So the movie that I'm in, if you will, the world that I live in, it certainly has some heart-wrenching parts to it. I go into communities and I see suffering, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of joy in this work. I feel so much joy that I get to be a part of it. I am absolutely enjoying the journey. I'm learning every day. I'm stretched in so many ways. There are things I thought I knew that I realized I didn't actually know as well as I did. And I've had to go unlearn some things and learn some new things so that it's such a dynamic environment. So I'm absolutely enjoying the journey.
And your inspiration? Absolutely. What has been your inspiration along the way?
Oh, the most impactful leader I have ever known in my life that I've gotten to know happens to be a woman and happens to be my mom. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And oh my goodness, I walk around and ask myself almost daily and sometimes more than once in the same day. My mother's now deceased and this will be the 10th mm-hmm. year we will commemorate her passing a decade ago. But she's never left me. She's never left me. She was a woman who was the daughter of sharecroppers. She was brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And she sacrificed. She's the oldest of her siblings. And she sacrificed her own education because as a sharecropper and as being the oldest, mm-hmm. During harvest season, she didn't go to school. But she made sure that her siblings did. She didn't graduate high school, but every one of her younger siblings did. She was such an example. And then, although my dad, he was a hardworking, dedicated guy too, and he worked as a day laborer a lot of the time, and mm-hmm. he worked himself up in the construction industry. But my mom, though they didn't have a lot in that way, my mother was the inspiration behind deciding that she was not going to look past kids in need. So she went out and when she'd hear that there was a child who was suffering, she'd try to find a way to help. And my mom, over the course of my mom and dad's life together, they were mom and dad to 108 children.
Wow. That is absolutely amazing.
I'm so privileged to be one of them, one among them, and to watch the struggles that my mom had out loud. So she didn't hide struggle from us. And I'm so glad that she didn't, because then it would have taken me longer than 6 months when I was at Walmart to make that turnaround, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to start that turnaround. But my mom's example of not hiding struggle, showing strength in spite of, and maybe because of struggle. Yep. So I didn't come up thinking that my mom's expectation for me was that I'd be perfect. She knew me well. She loved me anyway. And she let me know her and love her too. So my mom, for sure.
Isn't that great about moms? I can identify with so much of what you said. I lost my mother a couple of years ago, and so I get it. And that it just continues on inspiring you throughout your years. I mean, it just doesn't stop, right?
So it doesn't.
That's a blessing. So tell me, this is one of my favorite questions. It's so easy breezy, but what is it that makes you laugh? You know, we all need a good laugh. They say it's good for the soul. What makes you laugh?
There's a who makes me laugh.
Okay, that works too.
My husband makes me laugh out loud and double over.
That's what I'm talking about. It's that double over, gut-wrenching kind of laughter that just really just knocks you out.
We've been married for 33 and a half years now.
Oh, wonderful.
And he knows me too. He knows me so well. And so there, you know, when you're with somebody for all that time, we started dating when we were teenagers and we've been together for so long that we have all of this shared history. So inside of a moment that wouldn't be funny at all to anybody else, he can make it hilarious for me, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes it's just a look that he gives me, you know, the side eye or he'll say one word, or he'll just go, and then I'll burst out laughing. And yes. he gets me, I double over. And in my work, I've done hard work, as has he, but in my hard work, when I have a hard day, he knows when I've had a hard day. Like my husband even knows I get migraines from time to time. And he tells me in advance, Claire, do you want me to get the medicine? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, Claire, you know you're about to have a migraine. I'm like, he is so in tune with me that yeah. he even notices in advance of the migraine that I've got that little thing that happens before the migraine happens. So, but he can also tell when I'm, when I need a good laugh. So he will talk Seinfeld with me. He knows the jokes that'll matter, that'll mm-hmm. get right to it, and that'll change my mood immediately. So he it's definitely Barry Fontenot. Barry Fontenot makes me laugh.
That is awesome. That's wonderful. And no better person than your husband to make you laugh like that, because it's day in and day out. So you know that you'll get that good laugh in. So, you know, of course, we've been talking. We talk about feeding America. We talk about hunger in this earth. So much is happening in the world that we live in today. And people are often looking for a word of encouragement. Do you by chance have any favorite sayings, perhaps a motto that you use to encourage yourself and perhaps others?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go back to something that happened, an experience I had at Walmart that gives me that. I wanted to understand what was the common trait among highly successful people. And what I learned, it wasn't where you come from, wasn't the school you went to, lots of things it wasn't. But that what highly accomplished, highly successful people have in common is that they expect to win. And people who expect to win usually do. And no matter how bleak it might seem, feel in the moment, you can't win after you've given up. Mm-hmm. So to keep on going, when I struggled with cancer and I used to have a mantra, I'm not a runner, but I ran during chemo to try to keep myself going, especially when I was feeling weakest. And my mantra was, I am strong, I am strong, I am strong, I am strong. So I think it's a combination of those two things. And mm-hmm. if I had to land on anything in particular, it would probably be, I am strong. I am strong. And the person who needs to be convinced is you. Mm-hmm. The person who needs, that's how it connects back to the first one. The person who needs to be convinced is you. And sometimes I forget that I'm strong and I have to remind myself. So you that's are strong. Right.
Absolutely. And saying that out loud just kind of reinforces that. And you keep that with you day in and day out. Boy, I tell you, Claire Babineaux Fontenot, I really enjoyed this conversation today. It is so nice meeting you via Zoom, of course, but it's just so thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, I know, to talk with us.
Oh, I am honored that you would talk with me. Thank you so much.
Well, you are enlightening as a powerful woman, so I'm glad we had a chance to talk. And I want to thank all of our audience for joining us for another edition of Powerful Women, Let's Talk.
Produced by women, about women, these powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.